RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark Delight Podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Fangs.
They have it. And it is Wednesday, and God knows what's happening out there.
I do. I know some things.
Good.
There's some things happening. Make sure you guys stick around for the whole show, because at the end we're going to bring you an awesome interview with Ned Ryan about his new book. But before we get to Ned, a lot of things are going on. First of all, can I just say two words? John what? Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
I always loved John Stewart. I always loved him. Did you always love John Stewart?
I used to, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when the Daily Show was at its peak, I was watching him a lot. Yeah. And you know, even into later years there too, I'd even keep watching him and give him credit where credit was due, because he would go easy on people like Ron Paul.
Yeah.
And point out how people like him were obviously being hidden for one reason or another. So,
yeah. He went on Stephen Colbert, and he did like a really, really funny. Here, you want to hear it? Some of
yeah.
it?
There's a chance that this was created in a lab as an investigation.
A chance?
I think there's evidence. I'd love to hear it.
There's a novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Oh, you know who we could ask? The Wuhan Novel Respiratory Coronavirus Lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. That's just a little too weird, don't you think? And then they ask the scientists, they're like, how did this... So wait a minute, you work at the Wuhan Respiratory Coronavirus Lab. How did this happen? And they're like, a pangolin kissed a turtle. And you're like, no. Wuhan. Oh, because there's a coronavirus loose in Wuhan. How did that happen? Maybe a bat flew into the cloaca of a turkey, and then it sneezed into my chili, and now we all have coronavirus. Like, come on. What do you think happened? Like, oh, I don't know. Maybe a steam shovel made it with a cocoa bean. Or it's the chocolate factory.
Yeah. Well, it's all, let's say, there's no way to say it. It was a positive moment there where, through laughter, the goalposts were gently shifted. But will it go anywhere past the glaringly obvious into the, you know, where the original grant money came from, and how all of that research was exported out into Wuhan? I don't know. I just you know, we're just so far into this thing right now for everybody to be given permission to laugh at this. And knowing that they're only going to allow it to go so far, the understanding, because other than that, you look at the G7 and everything else, and there is only one game plan right now, and it is vaccinate the world. So they've yielded this. They've surrendered this part of the story. Wuhan, yes, it's obvious, and now you are allowed to see how obvious it is and laugh about it too.
Yeah. So. Without fear of being called a domestic terrorist, which is something.
Exactly.
They're throwing that around quite liberally the past few days, which brings me to some of my next clips. Revolver News has been one of the organizations that has been doing an absolutely fantastic job of covering what's going on January 6th. And so yesterday, Tucker Carlson had them on the show. Now, Mark Levin had Julie Kelly on, on Sunday to talk about this. And apparently the people who are in prison right now are facing retaliation for Mark Levin's show. Did you hear about this?
No.
They're now apparently, as per some messages that have come out, put into solitary confinement for a week with no rec time or anything of that nature. And it's terrifying, but let's listen to some of this with a gentleman from Revolver News.
According to this, the Beatty guy?
I have to say, remarkable piece that you just put up late last night, read it in bed at midnight, that the FBI was organizing the riots of January 6th.
Well, yes, it certainly suggests that possibility. And I'm hearing from people that this is the most important and the darkest investigative piece they've seen in years. But the American people deserve the truth about 1-6, not just for the sake of Ashley Babbitt, not just for the sake of the hundreds of people held in prison unjustly as a violation of human rights, but for the sake of the 70-plus million people who are Trump supporters or just against the corrupt ruling class who have effectively been labeled de facto domestic extremists by our own government. And I believe the key that unlocks the truth to 1-6 is the following question. To what extent were the main militia groups imputed to the 1-6 so-called capital siege? To what extent was there infiltration of those groups by undercover agents or informants? And to what extent, when we see the unindicted co-conspirators who occupy senior positions in those groups, to what extent are those people being spared prosecution on account of a prior relationship with the federal government? Yep. Those two questions create a thread. And when we pull that thread, the ugly truth of that event and perhaps even the country we live in will be exposed.
I got to ask, because it may answer one of the great mysteries, is this, I think there are 14,000 hours of unreleased video footage from that day the administration is hiding from us. Do you think this is why?
I think that's certainly a possibility. It's extremely suspicious. Even going back to this so-called pipe bomber video, remember mm-hmm. the pipe bomber, the Capitol pipe bomber? The FBI has been extremely suspicious in withholding evidence, video evidence that could help identify this bomber. Which
now I'm pausing it because the Revolver News did a piece, a couple pieces. Number one, they did one specifically on the pipe bomber and the missing frames. There are missing frames in the video that they released to the public that would have, there's no explanation for it. You know, the person's coming into frame and then gone and then leaving frame. There's a whole section missing in the middle.
Yeah. And I've seen the, now of course you and I, we've even talked about the footage of the black clad, almost like, platoon that was allowed into the Capitol building before everything else, everybody else, to then open up windows and doors and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. There's coordination. There is tens of thousands of hours of footage that is being sat upon. And
Revolver also did a very detailed piece using the footage that was released of the people that supposedly, allegedly sprayed the bear spray at Officer Sitnik, which it didn't end up happening. They deconstructed this video and showed that it was not them. They did not spray it, and bear spray was not what was sprayed at that officer by these people. And they literally destroyed the government's case, and there's been a lot of backtracking since then on this. So here's the rest of the clip. Sorry.
Presumably they want to do. But if you may, I'd like to make a general point. And it really, after seeing all this, you have to ask yourself, does the national security apparatus do anything but conspire against the American people? I'm led to conclude that we cannot have a democracy. Everything in our politics will be fake and performative until we bring the national security state, including the FBI, to heel. It's not a left issue. It's not a right issue. That's every right. Politician who cares about our country should demand a Church Committee 2.0.
Immediately,
because literally, there even the Daily Beast had a story the other day, Frank. I have to try and find it for the show notes. Glenn Greenwald shared it. where they said that the comic strip gunman, remember?
The comic strip gunman?
The guy that attacked the ISIS guy who attacked the in Texas.
I Oh, yes, go ahead, yeah.
He was the informant for the government, the FBI agent that was working with this guy as a, not an informant, as a handler, for lack of a better word, instructed him to do what he did. They're creating the very thing they're trying to stop. Like, who knows if this guy would have gone and, you know, done what he did if he wasn't instructed to do it by a guy working for the United States government. The same thing happened in the Trade Center. Like, we can go back in history of the times that the United States government, the quote, national security apparatus, has been the reason for these things happening. In the Revolver News piece yesterday, he went through a whole big deconstruction of the supposed plot to capture Governor Whitmer on October 6th, interestingly enough, of 2020. There were 80% of the people in this group were actually FBI.
I've been getting through the Revolver piece on this. It's something, I don't know. It's just sickening.
This is, look, you've got hundreds of people in jail on misdemeanors. I wish I could find, hold on, I'm just going to pause it real quick. All right, I found it. Thanks to AKA underscore real dirty Josh on Twitter, the dirty
Josh.
Show. Yeah, here we go.
My next guest should be getting a Pulitzer Prize for her unbelievable reporting on what's been taking place with these individuals subsequent to January 6th. Julie Kelly, she's the senior contributor at the American Greatness site, which is a terrific site. Disloyal opposition author. Julie Kelly, you've been writing a lot about this, but not just ubiquitous, very comprehensive, very deep. You've been studying the charges that have been brought against these people. We've got SWAT teams out there. We've got, they're hunting them down all over the place. People who have done nothing violent, maybe they trespassed. What is it that we should convey to the American people about what's taking place here?
Well, Mark, thank you so much for having me on. It's such an honor. I think what the American people need to know is that the U.S. government, Joe Biden's Justice Department, is holding political prisoners in a jail in Washington, D.C., that has been opened up specifically to house January 6th defendants awaiting trial. They've been denied bail. They're living in harsh, almost solitary confinement conditions in this jail. But what's overall happening is we can get into the specifics of what's happening at this jail. I call it the deplorable jail because that's, of course, how the Biden regime views these people. But the FBI and DOJ continues this nationwide manhunt. They've arrested almost 500 people now, mostly for misdemeanor charges related to what happened on January 6th. This is a political persecution against Trump supporters. And the American people need to know what is happening and why it's happening.
So there's that. I'm going to listen to most of this, Frank, because it's really, really important and well done. Here. About guns.
Okay.
If it'll play.
How many of these individuals had weapons with them? Weapons in the terms of firearms, as an example.
So they referred to this as an armed insurrection. Nancy Pelosi came out on January 7th, held a very dramatic press conference, and referred to the events of January 6th as an armed insurrection. So that was all it took for the media and plenty of Republican politicians to go ahead and echo that that line that this was armed. But Mark, not one person has been charged with carrying or using a firearm inside the Capitol building that day. As you know, the only person who used a weapon, a firearm, inside the Capitol building was the still unidentified Capitol Police officer who shot and killed an unarmed female veteran, Ashley Babbitt. So still, after all this time, more than 4-5 months, this manhunt where FBI agents are, as you said, conducting pre-dawn raids of people's homes, in some cases breaking down, raiding people's homes of innocent people who they later claimed it was a case of mistaken identity. But they're tracking these people's cell phone usage, all of their posts on social media, their own selfies. They're using all of this evidence against them.
And then we have the Biden administration coming out yesterday with the See Something, Say Something campaign for family members to report their, quote, almost radicalized towards violence family members to the FBI.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's, I mean, I don't know.
Again, you know, what we're seeing out here, what we're seeing from Christopher Wray and, you know, all of the still in existence, you know, people that are, the FBI, I mean, and the hearings that I'm watching of these people saying, like, basically, honestly, that anybody that is a conservative is a domestic terrorist. That is literally what they're doing. I'm not even being facetious here. And people are talking about it. You know, Jesse Kelly had something that he said. He said, the fact that they're weaponizing, this is the scariest thing to happen. I'll read exactly what he said. Hold on. The system slowly but surely turning everyone on the right into a domestic terrorist is without question the most frightening thing happening in America today. They're setting the stage to use the full force of the government against their political opponents as communists do. And CNN has a clip. The FBI has warned lawmakers in Washington that QAnon followers may become more violent because they can no longer, quote, trust the plan. And their chyron at the bottom says, scary warning. QAnon followers may turn violent.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I saw that. And they threw Mark Fincham into the mix.
Yeah, of course, because he's running for Secretary of State and he's a man of honor. Who anything that has to do with election integrity is somehow a QAnon thing. I don't. It's,
well, they queued him up talking about pedophilia in political ranks.
Oh, because that never happens.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a damn break. Give me a break. It's horrible. By the way, to all the Media Matters freaks out there who are listening to my show, because we're in the Media Matters now, Frank, Dark to Light is.
What do you mean?
They picked up our episode with Dan Schultz.
Okay.
To show how the crazy conspiracy theorists are taking over the Republican Party.
Because that's fun.
Dan Schultz is the Pied Piper of crazy conspiracy theorists. You know, he's got his trumpet and he's out there explaining to people how to use the process the Republican Party put in place to get involved in the party. You can't have that. Can't have normal people involved in the Republican Party. Print that, bitches. Ouch. Shifting in my seat because it's
nah.
Bastards. Anyway, so speaking of election integrity, let's move to that real quick, shall we? Arizona Attorney General. Do you see this letter?
Yep.
Puts out a letter saying to the federal government, any attempt to try to interfere in our sovereign right to investigate our own election will be met with absolute resistance. I'm going to find the exact letter here because it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It really is. And it's everything I was talking about before about the charter for the country and what's going on here. And that the Media Matters types don't care about. They don't care about that. And the real thing here is that there is a concerted effort to get rid of any and all check against their power lust.
You got to read that. Can I read this?
Yeah, go ahead.
It says, Dear Attorney General Garland, late last week, you made troubling comments about the ongoing efforts in states to ensure election integrity. Your statements displayed an alarming disdain for state sovereignty as defined under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution. Remember that thing? I added. And the election provisions in Articles 1 and 2. Your comments followed a May 5th letter from Pamela Carlin of the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division on the subject of the Arizona Senate's oversight of the Maricopa County audit. This letter appeared more interested in supporting the hysterical outcries of leftist pundits on cable television rather than the rule of law. My office is not amused by the DOJ's posturing and will not tolerate any effort to undermine or interfere with our state Senate's audit to reassure Arizonians of the accuracy of our election. We stand ready to defend federalism and state sovereignty against any partisan attacks or federal overreach. And it goes on. But there was also an article that came out this morning from Bernie Kerik in, I believe it was, yeah, here it is, on Newsmax. Listen to what he says, and he's absolutely right. It's titled, "The Devastating Reality of the Arizona Forensic Audit." Democrats in the mainstream media have been aggressively denouncing the Maricopa County, Arizona election audit from the beginning, and at first I didn't understand why. I thought it was because they were afraid of what the results would be, but now I believe it's something far worse. They aren't just afraid of the outcome, but they're afraid that the audit results will be irrefutable and unimpeachable. They know their efforts to discredit the process in Arizona will not stand up to scrutiny, and here's why. Listen to this, because this is the model that's going to be going on all over the country very shortly. To say I was impressed after viewing the audit process for myself would be a massive understatement. I've spent decades working in security and law enforcement at the highest levels. This is exactly the level of conscientiousness and attention to detail I would demand for a sensitive or high-profile investigation. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel. They're using the same methods casinos have used for decades to catch cheaters. Before a person can even come in, their name's on a pre-approved list. After winding their way through corridors, they get a security checkpoint where their ID is checked. After being briefed, visitors have to forfeit cell phones, cameras, any writing implements they may be carrying before they're on the floor of the audit, which is why the claims of seeing auditors wielding blue and black pens are implausible. On the floor, the audit is conducted in several stages. The tables in each section are color-coded, and workers wear shirts with corresponding colors, making it easy for anyone to spot if someone strays. At every table, there's accountability and supervision, all of it live-streamed and viewable by the public. Just like in a casino where pit bosses keep a close eye on a relatively small section of tables, there's an audit supervisor responsible for groups of 2 to 3 tables. If problems arise or anything's even slightly amiss, the supervisor immediately steps in to address it. And they're under state-of-the-art cameras positioned directly above each table. Every ballot goes through distinct stages, starting with a simple count. One by one, ballots are placed on rotating stands in the middle of each table. One is viewed and counted by 3 separate people whose tallies must line up. Each batch has 50 ballots. All of them are counted, boxed, sealed, and marked with the name of each counter like an evidence label. Then it's taken to a locked cage, and at the next station, it does a digital imagery examination, which is done at such a high resolution that it's better than reviewing the ballot itself because you can zoom in without losing any detail. He says, when he was there, one of the auditors showed me an example of a ballot that was flagged as suspicious because every single oval was filled out perfectly without a single stray mark, something that would be easy for a machine, but almost impossible by hand. And he goes on and he says, now that I've seen the process for myself, I finally understand why it has the Democrats so hot and bothered. They know that if anything improper happened in the 2020 election, this audit will catch it. And they also know they have no hope of refuting any improprieties the audit reveals. It's too ironclad for them to poke holes in it.
Too ironclad for either even the same old judges to say, no, there's no standing and blah, blah, blah.
Standing for what? I mean, what are they going to do? They're not, I don't think that the plan for the Senate is to go to court necessarily.
Right. So it's just really just to keep acting locally.
And for legislation.
Yeah.
And to maybe revoke the contract on these machines. And to make sure there's no mail-in ballots anymore. And to make sure that drop boxes aren't a thing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To make sure that the facilities are staffed with and there's a bipartisan manner, it's going to overturn their entire operation, from the ground up, and it'll happen before 2022.
Well, that's fantastic. And how many of those supposed battleground states, which really aren't very battlegroundy at all, when you take away all the fraud? How many of those states? Obviously, we see Arizona leading the charge. Florida continues to shore up its place. I know there's stuff going on in Georgia and some in Pennsylvania. What about the Midwest?
Michigan, there is new information in Michigan that Matt DiPernell filed a motion to reconsider on. They have the affidavit of one of the people that works or runs an entire, you know, location who came on the record to explain what happened with her tabulation and the retabulation that day. They have more technical information. So there, the Senate or the legislators in Michigan are not there yet, but they're getting there and they're starting to kick and scream. Like they're starting to, they're at the stage of this where they call it ridiculous and they try to deny it all. Like, this is ridiculous. This is just the same way Raffensperger was doing until yesterday. Mm. Raffensperger saying this whole election was done. This is a ridiculous attack at our democracy, these audits and blah, blah, blah. Now all of a sudden he's singing a different tune, isn't he? Did you see that?
No, I didn't see the different tune singing, no.
Now he's saying they need an investigation because there's clear evidence that absentee ballot chain of custody was broken in Fulton County.
Now they need an investigation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like what they do is they deny until there is absolutely no choice but to give an inch. And then they start talking about how something needs to be explored or a process needs to begin or an investigation needs to begin. And from there, hopefully that takes another 6 to 7 months. And then give another little inch, and hopefully by that time we'll be past election night 2022.
Look,
it's what they did with Russia.
I know, but the problem is they can't do that now. They can't do that now. Why? Because we've got cases that have been granted. They're allowed, like, so the case in Georgia is on hold right now because they filed a motion to dismiss. So the Democrats hired a high-powered criminal defense attorney in Georgia to file a motion to dismiss on the forensic review of the paper ballots. They had been able to look at them, the ballot images, but they need their hands on the paper, and they demonstrated why, and the judge agreed and said there's absolutely no reason why these folks can't see these ballots, right? Then the Democrats criminal lawyered up, which is just okay. And remember, Frank, there's also another criminal investigation going on by the Fulton County DA that was supposedly looking into what President Trump was doing on the phone with Raffensperger. But I don't think that that's what it's about. I really don't. And she's a Democrat DA that was just recently elected. But I don't know. I'm not putting a ton of stock in this, but I don't think, because she said preservation notices to all the people, all the cast of characters that we need to uncover if there was any high level communication or cooperation here. Now, could that be a cover up? Absolutely. Absolutely. But they freaked out about it when it happened. It was in the press. And now we've got Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay under, you know, subpoena to
I did not know that.
To be deposed. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wonderful. I was so happy to hear that. So happy to hear that.
Yeah, Ruby Freeman and Shay will, they're being deposed for, it's on, again, technicality holding it up, but there is nothing, they're at that point in the case, in this other case. I'll put these articles in the show notes so you can, you know, direct people to them if you want. It's detailed at uncoverdc.com, all of this. Andrew, Michigan, Arizona, what's going on in Georgia, and they're not going to be able to, this is not going away. It's not going away. No amount of domestic extremism labels on the entire country are going to stop it from going away, especially not when you have the poll that you mentioned saying 40% of Democrats, which is probably closer to 60. You would look at freaking Biden with his note cards and with Putin. Give me a freaking break.
No, dude, listen. I forgot what I was going to say. Shit.
I'm like, yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat, literally, listening.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's, you were saying, because no amount of domestic terrorism accusations and declarations are going to be able to stop any of this. And it's true, just on a larger level. I mean, there is this cyber pandemic thing. Mm. I went on into it in depth again last night. Probably be doing a. It'll probably come up a little bit again tonight because I have the, I have a really interesting guest on that would know a little bit about what the plan moving forward is. But Tracy, they are talking about NATO, the World Economic Forum. They're all saying the same thing here. Cyber attacks now are they're something that they have to reaffirm. They are as good as any other conventional act of war that will trigger Article 5 to bring an entire world together to fight a given enemy. The World Economic Forum, talking about the cyber pandemic that that may be coming, says they're even saying in the event of a COVID-like cyber pandemic. They keep saying COVID-like cyber pandemic to talk about the spread and the impact on society, on social, on economic, on everything. They're saying things like the only real way that we can ever stop the spread of something like this in real time is to disconnect tens of millions of devices from interacting with each other and from larger networks. So I'm thinking,
but all they're going to do by doing that is defeat their goal.
Well, listen, the reason why I bring this up in correlation to what you're saying about nothing can really nothing they do can stop these processes and this growing curiosity from people, because people are not going along with this crap. The QAnon articles that CNN are posting and on their websites are being read by the most pathetic remnants of what they used to have as far as leadership goes, and then you think about where they may have to go in the future to just literally unplug the internet to stop us from talking to each other, because there is nowhere, there's nothing they can do.
The biggest mistake they ever made was kicking us off of their platforms. In their hubris, they screwed up. And I said it when it happened, they screwed up big time because they have no control over the thought leaders in quotes anymore. They have no control over the everyday American anymore. They kicked them all off. Haha, we'll get you. Guess what? You think we're not going to find other places to put, you know, factual information and share? You think? And now you can't throttle it anymore, you morons. Idiots.
That January 6th thing, though, I've got so many questions. Actually, I've got one big question, and that is something I have not heard anybody ask Donald Trump.
Everybody come there?
Yeah, forthright way. It is the only thing I have ever, because I was curious up to that point, what was planned. I was curious because it was billed as a day of great revelation and of celebration, not of uprising and war. It was a day. It was billed as a day of great revelation and celebration. I want to know.
Patrick Byrne told us basically.
What did he say?
He said that Pence was supposed to postpone and didn't do it.
He was supposed to postpone the certification?
Yes.
The counting, I mean?
Yeah. The Electoral College.
He was supposed to.
10 days.
And what was going to happen within 10 days?
Well, remember Ted Cruz and like five other senators asked for 10 days to be able to do these investigations, almost like what's going on right now in Arizona?
Well, I don't know. If that was really it, then I don't. That's ridiculous too, because what the hell is 10 days actually going to do? Look at the 7 months now that has been spent, and with diligent work being done, mind you. But look at how much time it's taken. So I don't. That doesn't pass a sniff test for me either. I really just believe, whether it is Pence saying, "Hey, listen, I'm going to delay this thing," blah blah blah. I think it was really just about if in that case it's Pence setting up Trump just to help get people over here so that all of our company men and women can do their job in destroying whatever kind of momentum we have and starting a domestic terrorism narrative in the media that they will not let go of. But it's why. I just don't understand that. Who told them it was a good idea? Why? And why would this be promoted? It was such a contentious time. in our country.
I know.
I just would have not done anything. If it's going to happen, let everybody celebrate at home and tweet about it and talk about it.
You know, the interesting thing, too, is that... now I forgot what I was going to say. I forgot. I don't know. Whatever. Oh, well. It's time to leave anyway.
All right.
Guys, don't miss this next interview with Ned where we talk about some of this stuff. Ned Ryan has a new book out. We're about to listen to him right now. Amazing guy. Love Ned. Love Ned. And I guess we close the show until Friday, Frank.
Yeah. Till Friday. We'll see you then.
So we are joined by Patriot extraordinaire Ned Ryan. Ned.
Yeah, no, good to be back with you guys. I appreciate you taking the time and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, so you've written a new book, which I'm so excited to read. It's I haven't gotten to finish it because it's long. It's a little longer, but it's awesome. It's called The Adversaries, A Story of Boston and Bunker Hill. And it's basically, it's a retelling of these events, but not the way that people think. It's a story, but
that's right.
It's sort of like not always in exact chronological order. It's explain.
Well, so really the genesis for this was I've always been fascinated by the life of Dr. Joseph Warren, who was one of the main political organizers in Boston. He began as a protege of Samuel Adams, but eventually became his equal. And I would even argue in the last 9-10 months before Bunker Hill, was really the leader and driving force for the resistance to Parliament's acts. And so Warren became the president of Provincial Congress. He became a major general in the new army. You know, he goes to fight on Bunker Hill as another musket because he's just been appointed major general and said, I'm just here to fight. So it became one of those stories where I'm like, I want to tell a story, but then it became that much more because there's so many different dynamics. And I told somebody the other day, the principal defiance in the face of this arbitrary and overpowering authoritarianism back then is applicable to today. That makes it a story for all time.
Well, that's
it just became this kind of this exploration of how do I tell a story? And I call this faction, right? Where 90% of it's fact. I rearrange the order in some places. I have to, you know, imagine some scenes that I think are consistent with how people acted and what they would have said to move the story along, but really kind of explore, among other things, what is true sedition? What is true insurrection? What does it mean to have rule of law? What do we actually believe when it comes to natural inherent rights? And do we believe that when something is written down in black and white that actually is in harmony with natural rights, what are we prepared to do when those rights are violated?
And that's why this is not just a historical telling. It's basically like, I think you have a quote in your author's note. What is it about when you were on a tour or something and the historian said the winds of history are on.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, I know we all have in life where you remember very specific moments as though they were yesterday. And this was 21 years ago almost. And we were in Philadelphia. My dad was still in Congress. We were doing a tour of Christ Church in Philadelphia. And towards the end, the guide looked at us. And it was just one of those cool moments because it was like a great tour. And all of a sudden, he just looked at us and said, you know, history done well is like the wind at our backs. And I just sat there. And I've always been thinking about that for the last 20-some years. But the whole point being, Tracy, is history done well, the wind at our backs. The lives of Dr. Joseph Warren and others should inspire us, not just like, oh, this is a great story, but should inspire us to act. It's like the wind at our backs pushing us forward. It's into action and looking at what he was prepared to do and actually did do. It's a pretty incredible story. And he's, you know, the other thing I found out in my research, there was another guy that really looked to Dr. Joseph Warren and was inspired by his life, is a guy by the name of Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
And in his first inaugural address, Reagan stood up there and he quoted and he said, Dr. Joseph Warren, who I think might have been one of the greatest of the founding fathers. And then he quoted from his Boston Massacre anniversary oration from 1775, in which he said, our country is in great danger now. You are to decide the important question upon which rests the happiness and liberty of millions yet unborn. Act worthy of yourselves. Reagan quotes him in his first inaugural address. So it was just another cool tidbit of history I found when I was researching for the book.
And
I think our biggest problem right now, Ned, if I look back at that time and the story that you are bringing up and putting into the frame again, which is very timely, very necessary stuff, the biggest factor always is the level of propaganda we're living underneath.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the 18th century, it was in your the tyranny was in your face. It was naked and unafraid to show itself. And now you think about how many people out there probably have those sentiments inside of them. They know that we are under complete attack, but there is a blanket of don't you dare move, don't you dare think, don't post anything online, because you are the scourge, my friend, and we have you pinned with our propaganda. And, I mean, there's hundreds of people in jail because of January right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's one of those funny things. I told my wife, you know, I started writing this in real seriousness. I've been doing research and a lot of prep, but really started seriously in October of last year. And so obviously I'm literally in the middle of the book when January 6th happens. And I'm getting to the point where I really wanted to have a conversation between Dr. Joseph Warren and the Reverend Samuel Cooper, who was the head of the Brattle Street Church in Boston. The British hated him. They actually put him on a list for arrest because he was such a powerful voice inside of Boston. John Hancock, Sam Adams, Warren, others went to his church. But it became this conversation where I had Warren and Cooper, I have them exploring the ideas of what is true sedition? What is true insurrection? What does it mean to actually stand up and say, I don't think what I'm doing is sedition. In fact, I think what you're doing by your violation of higher law and your arbitrary authoritarianism might actually be the real sedition. And so I wrote that because I think that's obviously a conversation they had to work through back in the day. I think it's a conversation that we have to work through today and go, no, I don't even accept the premise of what you're saying, because you know what? If you want to have a really honest conversation, the founders of the Free American Republic were viewed as seditious and insurrectionists by the ruling class in England. And guess what they said? We will not submit to your arbitrary authoritarianism, which in some ways I feel like I'm repeating myself, because all authoritarianism is arbitrary. It's based on finite quest for power, money, whatever you want to say, but it's not based on absolutes. And I think this is the conversation and the thing that we have to start thinking through today. How do we, in a principled way, in a way where we have the ability to resist at the ballot box, if we can get some of this electoral reform, I want to qualify, get the electoral reform passed. How do we resist and say, we're not going to submit. We're not going to just sit here silently as a freeborn people who have God-given rights spelled out in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. We're not going to accept the premise anymore. We're going to resist.
It's becoming more clear, I think, by the day that conversation is going to almost be criminal to have, right?
And right.
So we have to look at the history of what happened here. Now, give me a couple of examples of how these guys navigated around that. Of course, without the stranglehold of big tech, because they could send leaflets around and
But even then, Tracy, I mean, this was one of the things where, you know, I really highlight the day of March 6, 1775. It was the anniversary of the Boston Massacre, but they held it the day after, right? Because the official March 5th anniversary was on a Sunday, so they had the anniversary celebration on a Monday. The British were right there. I mean, Dr. Joseph Warren comes to give the address in the Old South Meeting House to about 5,000 Bostonians. And I've stood in the Old South Meeting House. They literally had to have been packed shoulder to shoulder, standing room only, not only on the floor, but the double balconies. Well, about 30 or 40 British officers came to intimidate him into silence, and they sat on the steps of the pulpit right in front of him. It wasn't like they were 3,000 miles away. They came and they sat right on the steps, and there had been plans that if they felt Warren said anything seditious, they planned on assassinating him that morning. So when people go, well, big tech, all this stuff, this was somebody who stood in front of 5,000 Bostonians with, you know, 30, 40 British officers who were willing to kill him. And he still looked over their heads and he spoke the truth to the people of Boston and said, you know, these are our rights. This is what we need to do to resist. And it was just an incredible – he's a singular man. I mean, Dr. Joseph Warren is a singular man, but he really does show us in his actions. First of all, if you truly have planted your flag on absolutes and things that you believe to be right, there should be no fear. You have to be unafraid and say, no, I truly believe what I'm doing is right. And I think that's one of the things that, one of the reasons I wrote the book, so that people can understand, hey, people have confronted these ideas and these situations before. How did they respond? Oh, this should inspire me. This should be the wind at my back and really show me the way forward.
And you're seeing that a little bit now, especially at school board meetings, Ned.
Yes. I mean, this is why I just literally came out of a meeting that we were discussing the Loudoun County. I live in Northern Virginia in Loudoun County. It's kind of becoming ground zero for this whole school board situation with, you know, the critical race theory. It's, the thing that's funny, Tracy, and all of this is people on the left, like, you guys even know what critical race theory is. Yes, I do. It's Marxism. But it's Marxism according to race, not class. So I know exactly what you're doing. I'm not going to stand for it. Here in Loudoun County, they take 65% of our property taxes and put it towards the school board, which results in, gosh, it's over $1 billion they get annually to then turn around and try and indoctrinate our children. And so, you know, Ian Pryor and some other great people really took the bull by the horns. And I'm kind of coming alongside of them saying, how can I be of help? Because there have to be consequences for this egregious action. And I think the other reason that people continue to do this on the left, because there are no consequences, because we haven't stood up and said, hey, by all legal, peaceful means possible, I am going to have consequences for your actions. And if we can get you recalled or run off the school board because of what you're trying to do, great. That's the right that I have as an American citizen to do that, and as an American taxpayer to be able to do that.
So we were down, Ned. I don't know if you've been following this at all, but Uncover DC is doing a 24-part series with John Spiropoulos on critical race theory across the country. We were down there at the last meeting in Loudoun talking to Lilith and all of these amazing, brave people. And we're following this really closely because the groundswell of saving this country, in my opinion, is going to come from the parents, the moms and the dads. And
It is. And the thing that's amazing to me is how this really isn't according to party affiliation, even. Like, there are a lot of Democrats here in Loudoun County who I'm sure voted for Biden, right? Big, big, bad orange man, can't have him anymore. All of a sudden are realizing, wait a minute, we didn't sign up for this. This is ridiculous. And it's not even necessarily tracing the critical race theory, even though that's a big issue for us. It's why can't we have higher math? Why can't we have all of these advanced classes? You're going to dumb us down and actually maybe limit my child's potential for the future? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, the parallels here with what you've written and how, like, you had the foresight to start it when you did. It's amazing. And I know you're busy, so I won't keep you for too much longer. But,
well,
you know,
go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. You're breaking up just a little, so I'm not meaning to step on you. Go ahead and say your point for sure.
No, I think the point I want to make too is this. We're at a time frame, I think, in this country where they were kind of in the same situation 245, 246 years ago, in which a same people, because let's not forget, Massachusetts at the time was 85% direct English lineage. They were of the same, they weren't Scottish, they weren't Irish, they were English. And the English people on one side of who had come over 150 years before, brought with them some of these ideas that were encapsulated in the 1628 Petition of Rights, in the 1689 Bill of Rights, all the Charter of Massachusetts, in which they truly believed that these rights that are written down in black and white are sacrosanct. Well, the problem was English people on the other side of the Atlantic, in England, in London, thought that those were more a series of suggestions. And if they were inconvenient to the powers that be, well, we'll just push them to the side so that they don't hinder what we actually want to accomplish. And if anybody resists, we will send more men, more muskets, more cannon, more warships, and you will submit to us. And so it becomes, again, one of those dynamics. What do you believe? Do we actually believe that those things that are written down in black and white, that were written down several hundred years ago in our Constitution and Bill of Rights, still apply to today? And if we still believe that they apply to today, it should inspire us to action, in which we say you are violating our constitutional rights, our inherent natural rights, as spelled out by the Bill of Rights. We have to have that conversation. And you know why they're doing this thing in our school system? Because they don't want the American people to truly understand what our founders believed, how our country was supposed to work, how our Constitution and Bill of Rights still apply to today. And they're doing it for a reason, because if people are actually educated on those issues, they might start to look around themselves and go, this doesn't actually square up with the original vision for how this free American republic was supposed to work.
Yeah, so take history out of it, and then they won't know it at all. Exactly.
Exactly.
Or teach the 1619 version of history.
That's right. It's an insidious fiction that's revisionist history. And, I want to make this very clear. I am for teaching real American history, warts and all. Because we're imperfect people in an imperfect world. I still truly believe that the free American Republic is the pinnacle of Western civilization. We've had our faults. We always haven't been true to the idea of liberty first, last, and forever. But we are truly one of the greatest countries ever in world history. And we should embrace it and understand where we've had our faults, how we correct them, and how we move forward. But my hope is, Tracy, that people will read this, you know, the adversaries, and go.
Damn.
Yeah, damn.
Ned.
Love the story, what inspired these men, and hopefully they'll be able to understand. Can I go out?
Right at the end. Yeah, it was right at the end.
We lost you when you started to say, I hope that people read this and go, and then you just completely, we will.
Nuts. Do you want me to say it again, or what do you want me to do?
I think you're back. Say it again, yeah, and I'll cut this out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hope that people will read this book and understand, be inspired, and understand this applies to today. How will we now act in this time with the situation that we're confronting?
Yeah, for sure. Where can people buy it, Ned?
Go to Amazon tomorrow. Drops tomorrow, June 17th, anniversary of Bunker Hill. And I did that for a reason, right? It's the anniversary of Bunker Hill is tomorrow, June 17th. I wanted to drop my book on that date. Go snag a copy, read it, get it for Father's Day, right? Good Father's Day gift.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? Thank you for all you're continuing to do in these uncertain times. I know you're a really busy guy. Anything else you want to tell us that you guys are doing that people need to know about?
You know, it's one of those things with American majority. We continue, a firm believer in politics as policy. We need more good men and women to run for school board. We need them to run for city council, county commission, even Congress. And we train, it's political tactics and strategy. How do you actually win politically to be in the right place to implement policy? It's part of the resistance to what we're seeing. We just need more good people to come into the training so we can equip them so they can go out, be successful, win political fights so they can implement the right policy. So AmericanMajority.org is our website. I always encourage people, come check us out, come to a training, get equipped, get ready for the fight.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. Everybody go out, make sure you guys get a copy of The Adversaries, A Story of Boston and Bunker Hill by Ned Ryan. Thanks for joining us today, Ned.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.